Like, if I was talking shit about a judge's daughter and posting it on the Twitter with my couple hundred thousand followers and doing all of this crazy shit, I would be in pretrial detention right now. Bond revoked. My black ass would be locked up.
There'd be a hashtag going for you in no time.
Right?
Hashtag free the D.
Well, you know, Carol, as much as I would like to free the D, I'm not Jeffrey Toobin. Can't be doing that over the Zoom here.
What was he on? He was on something the other day commentating. I'm like, this fool is bold.
He's back. they let Toobin out of timeout here. Back on a lot of
Anthony Weiner tried that at one time too. We'll see how this works out for Toobin.
But at least with Toobin though, maybe I don't quite get what happened. Yeah, what he did was stupid. It wasn't
Anthony
like
Weiner has like a history of like
yes.
He was paying engaged for hookers with government money, wasn't he?
He was doing a lot of things.
But he was doing a lot.
Yeah. And it was like an underage girl or something. His wife with the hooker. It was like with government. It was with his campaign funds.
Yes, I think he was paying his side chicks with campaign money.
So he was pulling what's his name? Jesse Jackson with the rainbow. He was paying off his baby mama child support using the Rainbow Coalition's
These were
straight up prostitutes.
Well, there's a better comparison, I think. What was the dude who
sex workers?
What was the dude who was running for office, running for president, but got his
John Edwards?
Oh yes, he's a John Edwards. John Edwards.
Or forgive that motherfucker because he's from my state. My home state. Ah, man, what an asshole.
Hey, John Edwards and Anthony Weiner are psychos in a similar vein, because John Edwards' story is fucking crazy. And you know,
that dude
was still trying to be vice president, like, dog.
He was so bold. He's
like, well, you know, he's like, I know my campaign.
Well, I can be
number two. Man, get the fuck out of here. Obama must have been like, dog, is you serious right now? I can't imagine what that conversation was like.
And I was so, when he was my senator, like I liked him. So when he ran for president, I was like, oh yeah, not North Carolina. All right. We got somebody besides Jesse Helms that people will know us for. He had one job.
Yes, he did. All right. So Hope Hicks, she is set to testify in Trump's hush money election interference trial.
I really thought you said Hope Hicks.
Hoe Hicks?
Hope Hicks. Like,
oh, the Hope
Hicks of the day.
Like the Hope Hicks of the day. Well, generally speaking, that would be Lauren Boebert, but we don't have an award for that on this podcast.
Create one.
I feel like that's okay, but I generally speaking, it would have to be men being nominated for that, because I feel like
or a shithole of the week.
No, our whole pick of the week, because I just feel like that would if to constantly be choosing women and nominating women for that and labeling them whole in a derogatory fashion would just be a tad bit too misogynistic.
Well, there are plenty of male hoes. Jason Miller's one of them male hoes.
No, but I'm talking about like we'd have to have an event happen during the week for that person to be eligible.
Yeah, let's just get back to Hope Hicks.
Tangent.
Hope Hicks for the next topic. Only
before
that.
We do that, I will give you an example of Hope Hicks here with Lauren Boebert, where she underwent emergency surgery today to remove dangerous blood clots, because she's been diagnosed with a condition that disrupts blood flow. And I was basically saying that, first of all, don't worry. Her leg is fine after the surgery, but regardless, she would have still been able to use her hands. But also thank goodness she has government sponsored medical health care, because that is the only thing that could possibly stop her from having a stroke.
Yeah, and that could have put her into bankruptcy.
Not that medical kind of stroke.
Bankruptcy if she didn't.
I tell you what, ain't nothing like that good old socialism, right?
Yeah. So socialism, the only thing that could prevent Lauren Boebert from stroking out. All right. So Hope Hicks, Trump's former White House communications director, she's expected to be a witness in the Manhattan hush money election interference trial. And I'm specific about calling it that because really that's what it was. It was Trump's first attempt, or at least that we knew of, to interfere in the 2016 election. And it is likely that interference that propelled him into the White House in the first place. Cause if this story with, you know, paying Stormy Daniels and other women had become public at the same time that the tape dropped, it probably would have been over for him. Probably. But yeah,
I thought that about all the other stories, and there's so many things. Anyway, go on.
Well, but in 2016, again, you got to imagine.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, that Access Hollywood tape dropped, and it was a story for about 4 hours because immediately afterward, WikiLeaks dumped Hillary Clinton's emails, and then that was all the media covered for like weeks. And it's not that I was super engaged with news coverage at the time, but I particularly remember the day that it dropped because I was like, damn, that was fucking crazy. We grabbing people by the pussy now. And everybody, because it was like, it was a running joke with everyone. We're all laughing about how insane that was. He's like, he's doomed now. And then by the end of the day, the only thing people were talking about was Hillary's emails. So I was like, damn, how the fuck did that happen? Little did we know. Thanks, Russia. But so Hope Hicks is going to testify on behalf of the prosecution here. And I think what's most noteworthy about this is Hope Hicks, unlike Michael Cohen, who's like virulently and publicly anti-Trump, Hope Hicks is, or has been up to this point, pretty much a Trump insider, at least until she testified to the January 6th committee. But she ain't been out here on this. Trump is a criminal. I'm trying to get Trump. I'm trying to lock Trump up. She's just engaged in pretty normal post-administration or post-Trump administration activity. She's just been behind the scenes. She ain't been out front doing a lot of crap, making a lot of noise, none of that. So in terms of credibility, when she does testify in this trial, I feel like it will likely be impossible to impeach her if you're Trump's defense counsel.
Well, I mean, that's true. Like, she hasn't been on some rehabilitation or book tour. She just kind of went back to her life. But she was real, like, when you were reading the stuff, like, after January 6th and everything, and she was complaining, she's like, man, we're not going to be able to get shit. Like, no jobs. Like, we are effed. And I mean, her real qualification was that she was a model and she was friends with Ivanka. Like, that was her claim. That was her qualification when she got her job at the White House.
Yeah. I mean, if you go bigger picture for a second here, just in terms of like the people Trump ended up hiring when he, in his first administration, part of his problem is like normal people who were actually qualified to do a lot of these jobs were not going to go work for Trump. Like, so his pickings were rather slim. And one of the few things, I mean, obviously he didn't have much choice, but like you had a couple of options here where you could go with these retreads who had been excised from politics in America largely. And a perfect example of that would be like Paul Manafort. That's how, you know, like there's no presidential campaign in the United States in the last 20 years that could have possibly had Paul Manafort running it except for Trump's. You know, so individuals like that, or you had to hire these young people who might be extraordinarily bright or talented or whatnot, but had no experience. And, you know, I don't necessarily feel like Hope Hicks is extraordinarily bright or talented, but I mean, fine. she'll do.
Einstein
Visa. Talent is, I guess.
Sorry, Ty talked. Ty spoke.
I said it would depend on what the talent is, I guess.
No,
I was just saying it's she probably could get the Einstein visa if she wasn't American. The same.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry, not Ivanka. Ivanka's substitute.
Yeah, Melania. She could get an Einstein visa like Melania. And it's also funny you bring that up because what was it, like a week ago, some of the documents surrounding the way Melania's mother was able to get her green card. Yeah. Chain migration. The thing Trump rails against, his own family personally benefited from. So yet another level of hypocrisy there. But back to this whole Hicks thing. Qualifications aside, now she said publicly that she only found out about the hush money payments when that story broke publicly. But the prosecutors are saying that she was directly involved in helping Ooh. Michael Cohen negotiate those payments. Like, you know, weeks before the 2016 election. And if that is the case and she's willing to testify to those facts, Trump is fucked. Like, again, in terms of consequences, this trial probably more than likely ain't going to put Trump behind bars, but it is going to get a felony conviction if that's what she's going to testify to. Now, obviously, I don't know exactly what she will or won't say in front of a jury at trial, but if she testifies to facts anything remotely resembling what it seems or what it appears to be that she knows, he's screwed. Trump's forked, so he's finally going to face some kind of consequences legally. And I know we've been waiting on this moment.
Do you think Hope Hicks might fall out a window, or is that not, that just doesn't happen here?
I don't think Putin is
there. That would be pushing it. Like, I know we live in such a weird age with the misinformation, but there's no way they could spin that. They're not going to be like, oh, Hillary Clinton took out Hope Hicks because she was going to exonerate Trump. No one's going
to. I mean, if it didn't happen to Cassidy Hutchinson, I don't see it happening to Hope Hicks.
Yeah. Right. Again, we've been waiting on a moment like this where Trump finally faces some legal accountability, and I think we're finally going to get it.
Oh, gosh, I hope so. And as we said, you know, everybody was hating on this, but this has turned out to be our one shot.
Yeah.
It looks like, at least before the election.
I mean, the Georgia thing, unless somehow Fani Willis gets removed from that case, that's going to go to trial likely at the end of the year, maybe before the election, but it's definitely not going to conclude before the election. And then this DC case with Trump's attempt to overturn the election, the Supreme Court could find a number of ways to either one completely moot the trial by granting Trump some form of immunity to these charges, or two, they could find a way to infinitely delay it until after the election, if not as far after the election. And we don't have to get into the mechanics of that, but like, there's really only one path for the Supreme Court to get that trial back on track, and that's to stamp out Trump's claims for immunity and do it in a timely manner. And then the Florida documents case, again, on you might listen to a number of other podcasts who talk about every twisting, turning development in that particular case. I don't talk about it much on here because we already concluded like a year ago. The Judge Cannon concluded 6 or 7 months ago that Judge Cannon was going to do everything she possibly could to ensure that this trial doesn't take place before the election, if it does at all. And I think we were pretty spot on in that analysis. And then all the, you know, and shout out to the people who like inform you of like the way the system is designed to work and how Canon is abusing that with these, with, you know, on these other platforms. But I feel like we were spot on, like, you know, in every instance where they're like, oh, we're down in the weeds about this particular motion and this ruling and this filing and the fact that she's had all these motions that haven't been decided, and they're not even on the dot. And like the conclusion is that she ain't going to trial before the election unless they get her off the case, which again, she's put DOJ here in a spot recently, with demanding that DOJ, submit some jury instructions that for all intents and purposes are violate the law. Like the jury instructions are the total opposite of what the law says. So, you know, if she orders, anyway, more importantly is she's doing everything in her power to make sure that don't go to trial, but she might fuck around and make a reversible order that could get her appeal up off the case.
Yeah, I mean, she's trying really hard. She's being really delicate to keep it from going to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals.
Yeah.
But she also is not the brightest. And no. Sooner or later, shit catches up to you.
She gonna fuck around.
You're engaging in fuckery like that. You know?
I mean, she's also set herself up in a number of ways to tank the case once it does go to trial, by... not for it's a lot. We don't even need to get into the weeds again. That's what the other podcasts are for, to get into the weeds of all the comings and goings of Judge Cannon in Florida. We ain't there on this podcast because it's not going to go to trial, not as long as she's there. Anything else on Hope Hicks, Carol? You got anything?
I'm tired.
Yes, I too am tired of all of this shit, but yes, I also have too.
Also also in another sense, it's midnight o'clock.
I know we're wearing you out with these late podcasts, and I apologize, Carol. We're gonna do better.
Well, we need to start recording from the beginning and then save our shit talking for after.
Yeah, well, we'll keep that in mind for the next episode of the podcast. So moving on, Arizona's pro-Trump fake electors, they were recently invited to testify before the grand jury, and they chose to invoke their Fifth Amendment right to avoid self-incrimination.
These fucking morons, I swear to God, these idiots.
What the?
Just all of them. In Arizona, Republicans are showing more and more to be like just dumb.
It's crazy, right? Because you, like, once upon a time, not that long ago, you would think of like the Arizona Republican Party as like the fucking gold standard.
Exactly.
Like from John McCain on down, you'd be like, if there was a model for a reasonably center right conservative party that engaged with the public in a manner of ways that were typically popular and resulted in electoral wins, you look at Arizona, you'd be like, that's what you guys can be. And now it's like the Carrie Lake, everything Trump touches dies standard of Republicans in that. Yeah, yep. It's just,
and just she's wild. Running again, right? Like,
I'm assuming that she is,
or she's prime, or I guess it's still primary time.
Well, she's the front runner. Like, she's ahead of Ruben Gallego, like in polling.
Polls, we ain't got time to get into the specifics of how off the polls have been. We'll do that on another episode. Again, side note, now that Biden is leading in a number of polls here in some swing states, and just in terms of popular vote. Ain't none of these news networks talk about polls no more. It's fucking hilarious. Fucking hilarious how quickly that conversation died. Now that Biden, you know, has a slim lead, nobody cares about the polls. Again, and another side note from that, again, I'm sorry to go off on all these tangents, but however inaccurate the polls are, what you can kind of take away from them is like shifts from one candidate to another. So maybe the polls aren't accurate, but for a poll to go from like, you know, a Trump plus two to Biden plus three or whatever, for instance, that is like a 5-point swing. And regardless of that, like the fact that that's not predictive is one thing, but that it is showing some movement. If you can correlate that with, you know, developments in the news cycle or feelings about the economy, like that, those are the takeaways that you can get from polls in some instances. But yeah, you know, the Republican Party chair and a number of her cohorts from the fake elector plot, prosecutors invited a number of them in front of the grand jury, and they were all invoking their Fifth Amendment right. And I don't think it's noteworthy that they pleaded the Fifth, but I do think it's noteworthy that we're at a stage where the grand jury was like, okay, these are potentially targets of the investigation, but we're going to give them the opportunity to come in and share their side of the story. And typically when you reach that point where you're interviewing the targets, potential targets anyway, this is the place where subjects do become targets. Not long after that, you typically get indictments. So we could be in the, we could be nearing yet another set of indictments against individuals involved with attempting to overturn the 2020 election. And I know it's crazy that a lot of these legal developments in as far as trying to hold these people accountable have had little to no effect in terms of how the stuff is covered by the news and the mainstream media, rather, and what effect it has on public opinion. But that shit is all different when it's election season. Like, the Republican Party can't survive much more of this. And if more fake electors are indicted, or, you know, the Republican Party chair is indicted in Arizona, and we get other indictments in other states, like, it's spelling doom. Like, we're lining up all the dominoes, and all it's going to take is tipping a couple of them over for all of this to implode, especially this time of year. Any thoughts, kiddos?
Yeah, I'll take it.
I will take it.
Yeah. You'll take it.
I mean, yes, this is all, I'm just enjoying listening to you today.
So they're going to have,
well, I appreciate your undivided attention
in the bank. This, it's going to be really fun to watch as the races get down to the wire and who's going to come through, because there is no money and they aren't getting a dime from Trump. Not a dime. And then they won't be getting any from the voters either, because they've capitulated to MAGA, but MAGA's giving to Trump. So it's like they cut off their nose to spite their face. And I love this for them. Fuck them. Fuck them. They're not going to have shit, and I'm here for it.
Well, I think, at least specifically in Arizona, like, it was cool. You got invited in to speak to the grand jury. You took your Fifth. Like, really what it was, I don't know necessarily. I can't speak to the mind of the prosecutor specifically, but really it's also an opportunity to become a cooperating witness before you get indicted. Like, this is your opportunity to flip right here. You can point the finger, but they didn't do that. And they probably gonna pay the price. And, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, make sure you stay tuned. You get to join in and laugh with us as more indictments are handed down. And finally, the Florida Supreme Court has put abortion on the ballot in November in Florida by ruling that a 6-week abortion ban can go into effect, which is, you know, not ideal. But
it does not apply to that.
No, but they are going to allow ballot measures in November to enshrine rights to abortion or access to abortion up to 24 weeks in the state constitution. And they're also going to put recreational marijuana on the ballot. So I think a few huge takeaways.
November, because I'm going to Florida in like 3 weeks. And, you know, I mean, could you just expedite that one?
Carol, you trying to blaze up, you know, on your vacation here? Sorry, you're gonna have to wait. But what I think they do have, like, the legal synthetic marijuana.
Oh, they do have a Delta 8. Yeah. They have
Delta 8, Delta 0, sleep, but all that good stuff. So that's an option. But yeah, a couple of huge takeaways from this. Largely, having abortion on the ballot or candidates run in support of access to abortion, it's typically been the death knell for Republican candidates, as we recently had a House seat a state seat in Alabama flip, where the Democratic candidate won by 25 points, which is just fucking insane. This doesn't bode well for Republicans. Obviously, this does put Florida into play for Joe Biden. Not that you should necessarily expect that, but it is now not only possible, but it likely spells doom for a number of other Republicans. Rick Scott, for instance, who could potentially lose his Senate seat in November.
It's about time.
Yeah, but, you know, like, this will have consequences that reverberate far beyond Florida, because Republicans at this point, given that Trump lost in 2020, he's going to have to win, not only win states that he lost in 2020, but with this development, he's going to have to defend states that he won in 2020. And just given the state of affairs with the funding of the Republican Party, like, the party's broke. The apparatus to raise funds is totally dysfunctional. Laura Trump strong-armed her way into controlling the RNC, and they're giving all of their money to Trump now. Like, this, like, it's going to be impossible for them to spend enough money to defend Florida, rather, while also defending North Carolina, while also spending in all these swing states to Trump. It's just it's a wreck. It's a dumpster fire. And I potentially think that this could be like the tipping point for the end of their chances in 2024. Like, I'm not guaranteeing you Biden is going to win, but just if you look at the circumstances and the way things are lining up, this development is probably the one in which you will be able to look back on in November and say it really started today. This is where Biden's path to victory
is this where it began.
Yeah, I mean, that's not totally fair, but
where it's kind of solidified, possibly.
Yeah, this is the inflection point.
All right,
kids. I know you're exhausted, and I've worn you out. So we'll get to our shithole of the week award. Obviously, there's a number of candidates every single week who could likely warrant the nomination, but I feel like after this weekend.
Applying for our shithole of the week award. We get so many applications, so please understand, you aren't chosen this week, but you'll have many chances to be named shithole of the week.
Well, I feel like we have to nominate Caitlyn Jenner. So if you're unaware somehow, if you're listening to this podcast and you're not, like, you know, totally enraptured by the social medias and deep diving into the internet shenanigans, I guess it's possible that you missed all the Republican outrage over Easter Sunday. happening to fall on the same day as the Transgender Day of Visibility. There was a lot of right wing fake outrage about that. We don't have to get into it, but basically it's a day that's been around for over a decade. It just so happens that because Easter shifts around, because, you know, again, that's a day that it's always on Sunday and doesn't necessarily line up on the calendar the same date every month. Just a sheer coincidence here. But Jenner herself came out and said, on the social medias, quote, "I am absolutely disgusted that Joe Biden has declared the most holy of holy days, a self-proclaimed devout Catholic, as Transgender Day of Visibility. The only thing you should be declaring on this day is," quote, well, quote, inside of a quote, "he is risen," emphasis on he. And I just like, yo, man, you trans too, bitch. Like, what the fuck? I just don't understand. Like, how I don't understand. Why are you railing against trans people and you trans?
And then we're just going to bring that around to Clarence Thomas, people who run that, like Gays for Trump or anti, what is it? Gays Against Groomers, them people. Because they are vile too.
Not great. But yes, Caitlyn Jenner is the Clarence Thomas of the trans community.
Yes.
You know, if there are any trans listeners out there, I hate to speak for you, but I would imagine you probably feel about Caitlyn Jenner the way me and Ty feel about Clarence Thomas. We just vomit. But yeah, Caitlyn, you were hereby awarded the shithole of the week award. Bitch, look in the mirror sometimes. Just like, what the fuck? I don't understand. All right, Carol, closing thoughts. Got any? Here's your opportunity.
Yeah, I went to vote today in the primary, the Democratic primary in New York. And I was only the 10th person to vote in my precinct at like 7 p.m. And the polls close at 9 and they're open from like 6 a.m. So it's not great. Not a great showing. Dee talked about don't take what Dee said as a indication that you shouldn't stay vigilant and vote, because, you know, every vote does matter. And I would have probably murdered my husband if somehow Joe Biden didn't win in New York.
Because she didn't say that. But,
what? I said that.
Murdered. No, we don't talk murder. We don't premeditate.
No. Anyway, stay on top of it. Don't let your precinct only get 10 fucking votes in a day. Bad. Engage. Man. This isn't, nothing is a given. Anyway, take it away, next person.
That would be Ty. Closing thoughts after you.
Yeah, I was listening to this pod today, and it's something that I had thought about. And he was just talking about just how there's no community anymore. And I was thinking about that same thing in my old neighborhood when they were building these houses. And I would look at how they build communities now. And while these houses were super close together, it was less about community than trying to fit as much onto the space. But there was no playground. But these neighborhoods were made for families, but there was no like community space, things that get people out of their houses, get them into the neighborhood, gets them to where they interact and engage with their neighbors, to know them, you know? And I was just, you know, and so when they were talking about it, I was like, wow, okay, I'm glad I'm not the only one that, you know, has noticed that. But yeah, I was like, you know, no swimming pool in the community, no playground, not even like a common, like, grassy area. Just anything like a walking trail where people can walk their dog, a little dog park where people could meet up. And I think that has a lot to do with the state of things today, why people are so afraid. And it's because they don't know each other. There's no wanting to get to know each other. And my best friend Lizette called me today. I was on the way to get Jeremy, and her kids go to public school now. They used to go to private school. But during COVID, and then she loves public school. She's like, oh my God, the resources, public school's great. I've been wasting money. And she was talking about one of her son's friends, and they have their group of friends. And the little boy, not going to say his name, but his mom is Mexican, but his dad is like a Afro-Latino. So she goes, she doesn't know if he's like either Dominican or Panamanian or Puerto Rican, but he's not an American Black guy. But the kid is, you know, half and half, but whatever the case. So they were one of the kids. They were like, hey, are you going? You know, everyone's all excited. And he's like, no, my dad says I can't go. And then, you know, and the kids are like, what, why not? And then Caleb, the little boy, is right there. And he goes, my dad said he doesn't trust Black people. Now, mind you, these are 11-year-olds.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And the little boy just goes, oh, it's all right. I get it. And Lizette was like, friend, like this kid is in sixth grade and yet is carrying the baggage of these adults to have to be at 11 years old to be understanding of this kid's father's bigotry at 11, you know? And I said, well, his dad has probably already prepared him at this age to what he would have to deal with. But it's just, and she goes, in public school, I never would have thought, you know, people are, she goes, but I just don't understand. And she was like, her son just looked at him and he was just like, really? Like, it just, he couldn't wrap his head around that, like these kids. And so it's like that same thing. It's like, here is a friend of his kids and he's made no effort to get to know the parents. No effort to, well, you know what, let me step outside of my comfort zone and reach out to these parents and maybe say hi to them in the carpool, maybe speak to them, maybe get to know them as people. So at this point, this guy is exing his son out, isolating him from his own community at school. In that he now, they're going to be like, oh, that's the one with the racist dad, or you know what I mean? Or not being able to enjoy because of his dad's bigotry when all his dad has to do was get to know. And that, and it just continues to fuel, which is why they want these vouchers, which is why they want their kids homeschool. Because this kid, he's a part of this group and he probably knows that what his dad is saying isn't true because he's not experiencing that. This kid is a part of his friend group. Otherwise, he wouldn't have even been invited. And so that's conflicting for them. And so this kid, this poor kid has now had something heaped on him that he's going to have to reconcile himself with as he gets older.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it all ties into it. And then they continue to isolate themselves more and more and more, you know?
Ty, just pour that kid a shot of vodka. You he deserves it.
You know, I do hope that it doesn't change who he is, but it makes him more compassionate, though. I have a feeling by that the dad felt so comfortable to say that this kid will have to hide any kind of friendship he has, probably. Like they used to some back in the day where they would play at school, but then when they went home, we were living separate lives, you know? And they knew that that kid would never be invited to their birthday, that they would never be able to go to that kid's birthday. But it's sad because this is 2024, you know? And we are a multi, you know, racial community.
Well, that is until Trump wins in November and begins the purge. And that concludes this episode of Pardon the Insurrection.